Edgar Schein's helping has quietly revolutionized how leaders approach assistance across contexts, from corporate boardrooms to hospital wards. While not as flashy as some bestsellers, this unassuming book has become required reading at institutions like Harvard Business School and has influenced executives at companies like Google and Microsoft. What makes it so powerful? Schein challenges our fundamental assumptions about what seems like the simplest human interaction, helping someone. As it turns out, most of us get it completely wrong. When Oprah Winfrey cited this book during her Harvard commencement speech, she noted how it transformed her approach to philanthropy by revealing that true help isn't about imposing solutions, but about creating the right relationship. This insight might explain why, despite our best intentions, our attempts to help others often fall flat or even backfire. Helping seems straightforward. Someone needs something, and you provide it. Yet this deceptively simple interaction often goes wrong in both everyday and professional contexts. Consider asking for directions. A truly helpful response involves understanding your ultimate destination rather than mechanically answering your immediate question. When you ask where Main Street is, the helpful stranger might inquire, "Where are you trying to go?" before giving directions that might bypass Main Street entirely for a more direct route. This exemplifies the difference between surface-level assistance and genuine help that addresses underlying needs. This distinction between helpful and unhelpful assistance appears constantly in our lives. Computer technical support perfectly illustrates the problem. How often have you called for help only to receive explanations far beyond your technical understanding? The truly skilled support person first determines your comfort level with technology and adjusts their guidance accordingly. They might ask about your previous experiences with similar issues, use analogies you can relate to, or break down complex processes into manageable steps. Similarly, when children ask for homework help, they may actually be expressing anxiety about school performance or seeking connection rather than just answers. A perceptive parent or teacher recognizes these underlying needs and addresses both the academic challenge and emotional concerns. Even professional help, consultants, doctors, therapists, frequently fails when it doesn't address clients' actual needs or implementation capabilities. A consultant might deliver a brilliant analysis that sits unused because it doesn't account for the organization's culture, existing workflows, or resource constraints. A doctor might prescribe medication without ensuring the patient understands how to take it properly, has access to the pharmacy, or can afford the treatment. Effective helping requires understanding both the technical solution and the practical context in which it must be implemented. Help extends beyond one-on-one interactions into group settings. Effective teamwork essentially consists of successful reciprocal helping relationships where members anticipate and respond to each other's needs. In sports, one player's ability to succeed depends entirely on teammates' supporting actions. The quarterback can't throw successfully without linemen blocking and receivers running precise routes. This interdependence appears in business teams where researchers, designers, and engineers must coordinate their efforts, each helping others achieve collective goals. The language of helping itself reveals extraordinary breadth. Assisting, aiding, coaching, mentoring, facilitating, each carrying subtle distinctions in meaning and application. Mentoring implies ongoing guidance and wisdom sharing, while coaching suggests performance improvement and skill development. Facilitating focuses on removing obstacles and creating conditions for success. This complexity exists because help permeates every aspect of human interaction, from heroic rescues to subtle organizational interventions, from requested assistance to spontaneous acts when someone recognizes an unspoken need. Understanding these nuances enables more effective helping relationships across personal and professional contexts. All helping interactions operate within what Schein calls social economics, unwritten but powerful rules governing how we maintain status and face in relationships. When someone offers help, cultural norms require us to accept it or provide an acceptable excuse. When requested, we must provide help or explain why not. The value we attach to ourselves and others is constantly conveyed through these interactions. Our language reflects this economic foundation. We pay attention, invest in relationships, and build social capital. These rules vary across cultures, but fundamentally shape all social exchanges. When these exchanges become unbalanced, we feel uncomfortable until equilibrium is restored. Consider what happens when someone holds a door open for you. You feel obligated to hurry your pace, say thank you, or perhaps hold the next door for them. These aren't just niceties, they're essential transactions that maintain social order. Breaking these rules causes anxiety and tension, potentially leading to humiliation or offense. Trust develops when we can safely reveal more about ourselves without fear of being belittled or having our confidences betrayed. We test relationships by revealing personal information to see if others respond appropriately. The intimacy level in any relationship reflects how much parties have learned to trust each other through this mutual testing process. Our social interactions function as ongoing theater with roles scripted from early life. Higher status typically demands greater formality and constrained public behavior. We're often shocked when dignitaries are caught swearing or acting silly. Even in seemingly casual high-tech startups, status rules exist, sometimes communicated through subtle signals like how many times one rolls up shirt sleeves. Understanding these social dynamics is crucial because helping situations inherently disrupt the normal balance of relationships. The moment someone asks for help, they place themselves in a vulnerable position, what Shine calls one-downness, while elevating the potential helper to a one-up position. This status differential creates anxiety for both parties and sets the stage for the many ways helping goes wrong. Asking for help creates an immediate power imbalance that affects both parties psychologically and socially. It represents a temporary but significant loss of status, self-esteem, and independence when someone else must advise, heal, or support you. This fundamental dynamic explains many common behaviors, such as people who fall immediately declaring, "I'm okay," despite obvious injury, or professionals struggling silently with challenges rather than seeking guidance. The need to maintain control and project competence is particularly pronounced in cultures that place high value on self-reliance and individual achievement. In American culture especially, this resistance to help-seeking manifests in numerous ways. "Real men don't ask for directions" isn't just a cliché, but reflects deeper cultural attitudes about independence and competence. People often hide their therapy appointments, disguise consultations as meetings, and resist seeking professional help until situations become critical. This stigma is particularly evident in workplace settings, where seeking assistance can be interpreted as a sign of professional inadequacy. For example, senior executives might schedule consultant meetings in private conference rooms rather than visible spaces, or managers might resist bringing in external experts even when clearly needed. The helper's elevated position creates its own complex dynamics. Being asked for help immediately confers status, expertise, and power, whether the helper is a therapist, consultant, mentor, or friend. The helper assumes an active, authoritative role, while the client takes a more passive, dependent position. This power differential can lead helpers to fall into various traps, offering solutions prematurely, becoming overly directive, or unconsciously exploiting their position of influence. Many helpers struggle with the humble admission, "I'm not sure I can help with this," when clients grant them perceived expertise. These relationship dynamics create numerous emotional traps for both parties. Clients might present sanitized versions of their problems rather than addressing core issues, develop unhealthy attachment to helpers, seek validation rather than genuine assistance, or transfer unrealistic expectations from past relationships onto current helpers. Some clients become stuck in a pattern of learned helplessness, repeatedly seeking direction rather than developing their own problem-solving capabilities. Helpers face equally challenging traps, dispensing wisdom before fully understanding situations, pushing too hard against client resistance, overcompensating for client dependency by becoming excessively authoritative, offering false reassurance to manage their own anxiety, emotionally withdrawing from challenging clients, or allowing cultural or professional stereotypes to influence their judgment. Many helpers report struggling with boundaries, particularly when clients become overly dependent or resistant to change. The most effective approach to balancing these inherent inequalities is through authentic listening and deliberate status-building interventions. This means creating space for clients to demonstrate their expertise, acknowledging their insights and capabilities, and gradually shifting from a directive to a collaborative relationship. Successful helping relationships require conscious attention to power dynamics and intentional efforts to restore equilibrium through respect, validation, and genuine partnership. When asked for help, we can choose between three distinct roles, each with different assumptions and consequences: expert resource, doctor, or process consultant. The expert provides information or services when clients know exactly what they need. The doctor diagnoses and prescribes solutions based on specialized knowledge. The process consultant focuses on the relationship itself, helping clients discover what they truly need. Most of us default to the expert or doctor roles because they're culturally valued and familiar. When someone asks for computer help, we immediately start explaining solutions. When a friend describes a problem, we diagnose and prescribe. Here's what you should do. These approaches work well in simple situations, but often fail with complex problems. What makes these roles problematic is that both parties begin with significant areas of mutual ignorance. Helpers don't know whether clients will understand their advice, have skills to implement it, what their true motivation is, or how their context and past experiences shape expectations. Clients don't know if helpers have the knowledge and motivation to help, what consequences might come from asking this person, whether they can be trusted, or what costs might come with accepting help. The expert role works effectively when all assumptions are met, when clients know exactly what they need and can implement the solution. We routinely get help from repair people, financial advisors, and various experts in this way. However, this approach often fails with complex problems because several key assumptions cannot be met. The doctor role extends the expert role by adding diagnosis and prescription. This familiar approach appears when we consult doctors, counselors, coaches, and repair people. It appeals to helpers because it empowers them and justifies high fees through concrete deliverables like reports and recommendations. Despite its popularity, this role presents significant difficulties. Helpers struggle to obtain accurate diagnostic information without established trust, and clients often reject diagnoses they haven't participated in developing. Process consultation means the helper focuses primarily on the communication process rather than content. The goal is to equilibrate status and create a climate where both parties can remove their ignorance. This involves adopting a stance of humble inquiry, asking questions from genuine curiosity rather than testing preconceptions. The core assumption is that clients must remain proactive because only they truly own their problems, understand their situation's complexity, and know what will work in their culture. Even seemingly straightforward requests benefit from process consultation before shifting to expert or doctor roles, as demonstrated by effective tech consultants, auto mechanics, oncologists, and lawyers who build relationships before prescribing solutions. Building an effective helping relationship requires a specific approach that Schein calls humble inquiry, asking questions with genuine curiosity and a willingness to be influenced by the answers. This approach builds the client's confidence that help is available while allowing the helper to gather crucial information. Inquiry exists on a spectrum from pure to increasingly directive forms. Pure inquiry begins with attentive silence and body language that signals readiness to listen, using minimal prompts like "tell me more" to encourage full disclosure without presupposing problems. Questions seek concrete details rather than abstractions, helping clients structure their thoughts while allowing helpers to enhance understanding. As the relationship develops, helpers can shift to diagnostic inquiry, which focuses attention on specific elements within the client's story. By asking about feelings, causes, actions, or systemic elements, the helper asserts more control, which should only be done consciously and for valid reasons. Questions like, "How did that make you feel?" or "What might have caused that?" help build diagnostic capacity but change the conversation's direction. Confrontational inquiry introduces the helper's own ideas rather than merely encouraging client elaboration. Questions like, "Did that make you angry?" or suggestions like, "Could you try this approach?" introduce concepts that may never have occurred to the client. While powerful, this approach risks making clients feel more one down and may shut down further relevant information. Process-oriented inquiry shifts focus from content to the immediate interaction between helper and client. Questions like, "How do you think our conversation is going?" make clients conscious of the interaction itself, which becomes particularly important in assessing trust in the relationship. The progression from pure to increasingly directive inquiry reflects increasing levels of helper engagement and risk. Starting with pure inquiry gives clients maximum space while building confidence and demonstrating the helper's willingness to be influenced. The helper's subsequent choices depend on how they feel about the communication process, time constraints, relationship with the client, and their diagnostic sense of what would be most useful. Even seemingly simple requests reveal complex social dynamics. When a spouse asks for tea, the request creates a temporary one-down position. The helper should first adopt humble inquiry to determine what's actually being asked. Creating conversational space allows new information to surface before responding. Ignoring the request would damage the relationship by communicating indifference. In professional contexts, genuine inquiry often produces breakthrough insights. While consulting with a company's top team on meeting effectiveness, I observed they consistently failed to complete their agendas. Despite addressing behavioral issues, nothing changed. My breakthrough came from a simple question about where the agenda originated. Learning it was randomly assembled by the president's secretary prompted the group to implement a priority system, dramatically improving meeting quality. Helping relationships become particularly challenging when one person is chronically dependent. During my wife's extended recovery at home, I learned to prevent her feeling one down by proactively offering help rather than making her ask. I provided self-serving rationales, "This is good exercise for me," to reduce her guilt. As she regained strength, I faced the challenge of relinquishing control over routines I'd mastered. I discovered the harm of overhelping when I interjected information about my wife's symptoms during a nurse's visit, immediately sensing her tension. She later expressed anger at my speaking for her, which undermined her relationship with healthcare providers. This experience highlighted how victims of overhelp must provide feedback, as helpers need guidance on when their assistance becomes counterproductive. As my wife improved, I struggled to relinquish the expert role I developed in household tasks. Her different pace and methods challenged my established routines. I found myself impatient when she worked slowly on computer tasks I could do faster, and defensive when she corrected my food preparation or driving. These moments tested my helping attitude as my self-esteem felt challenged. Only through self-awareness and humble inquiry about her preferences could I relax and shift from expert to process consultant as needed. Effective teamwork requires members performing roles that create equity and maintain trust even under pressure. The essence of teamwork is developing reciprocal helping relationships among all members. When high-status team members like surgeons acknowledge needing help and engage in joint training, teams succeed by establishing equitable relationships. Building a team means creating multiple reciprocal helping relationships where members resolve four key psychological issues: determining their roles, understanding their influence level, ensuring their goals will be met, and establishing appropriate intimacy. Successful team leaders recognize these needs and create conditions for members to gain comfort with these issues. Building a team means creating multiple reciprocal helping relationships where members resolve four key psychological issues: determining their roles, understanding their influence level, ensuring their goals will be met, and establishing appropriate intimacy. Successful team leaders recognize these needs and create conditions for members to gain comfort with these issues. The importance of mutual helping correlates directly with task interdependence. In simultaneous interdependent situations, like surgical teams or team sports, helpfulness is critical. High performance comes not just from individual skills, but from members learning to help each other effectively. Sequential interdependence, like relay races or production lines, requires smooth handoffs between stages. Feedback provides crucial information about progress toward goals, automatically triggering corrective action when needed. For feedback to be helpful, it must be relevant to the target, requiring helpers to understand what clients aim for through humble inquiry. Effective feedback must be solicited rather than imposed, specific and concrete rather than abstract, fit within a shared goal context, and be descriptive rather than evaluative. In an oncology clinic I observed, effective helping manifested through staff respecting patients' dignity despite their dependent position. The oncologist gave the patient choices about treatment options, increasing her confidence and trust. All staff used inquiry to gather information and offer choices whenever possible. The most helpful nurses maximized open-ended questions and attentive listening rather than making assumptions about side effects. Help at a distance can work effectively when teams have previously established trust and role relationships through face-to-face interaction. For teams that have never met in person, helping relationships must be built through words alone, with specific requests demonstrating initiative, eliciting more helpful responses than vague, passive inquiries. Helping in leadership contexts involves creating conditions for teamwork, determining how leaders should help subordinates, and understanding how to help leaders themselves. These questions become complex in organizations where not all stakeholders are present or in communication with each other. Leaders inevitably deal with groups that have evolved their own cultures, norms, and ways of working. These often reflect local realities of how best to accomplish tasks, sometimes deviating from official procedures, what's called practical drift. New leaders cannot initiate change without first understanding these norms. This requires becoming an inquirer, establishing helping relationships with employees, and building trust. When a CEO asks a consultant to diagnose problems in an underperforming department, complexity quickly emerges. After conducting interviews, the consultant often discovers that employees perceive conflict between the department head and the CEO as the real problem. Effective consultants avoid this trap by not accepting the initial assignment as given. Instead, they begin by building a helping relationship with the CEO through inquiry, understanding what's truly troubling them, and exploring the CEO's possible role in creating the problem. Organizational change projects demonstrate that people don't resist change itself, but rather being changed by others. The key is reframing change as a helping process by turning change targets into clients. When organizations face non-negotiable goals from external forces, success comes from teaching employees necessary skills while asking, "What help do you need?" This transforms coercive unfreezing into a learning process where employees become clients and change agents become helpers. Organizational consultants must navigate the complexity of multiple, shifting client relationships while maintaining awareness of the entire organization as the ultimate client. The overarching principle is never to skip levels in the formal hierarchy, either upward or downward. When starting with the CEO, decisions about involving the next level must be shared between helper and CEO, continuing this pattern downward. Helping requires shifting from other activities to adopt a helping mindset, which can conflict with ongoing priorities. We face choices about whether to help when strangers, friends, or colleagues make unexpected requests while we're preoccupied. Receiving help can be equally problematic, especially when unsolicited. When suddenly offered help, we must react to someone else's initiative while managing feelings of being one down. Effective help occurs when both giver and receiver are ready. Check your emotions and intentions before offering or receiving help. Get acquainted with your own desires to help and be helped. Don't be offended when help efforts are poorly received. Instead, reflect on whether you fell into common helping traps. Effective help occurs when the helping relationship is perceived to be equitable. Remember that help seekers may feel uncomfortable, so ask what they truly want and how you can best help. As a client, provide feedback on what is and isn't helpful. Never assume you know what specific help is needed without checking first. The three possible helping roles are expert, providing specific knowledge/service, doctor, diagnosing and prescribing, and process consultant, engaging in joint inquiry to determine needs. Always begin in the process consulting role until you have enough information to determine if other roles are appropriate. Everything you say or do is an intervention that determines the future of the relationship. Communication isn't optional. Everything communicates something. When giving feedback, be descriptive rather than judgmental. Minimize inappropriate encouragement or corrections. Always begin with some version of pure inquiry. Treat each request for help as entirely new, even if it sounds familiar. Remember that no matter how familiar a problem seems, it belongs to the client, not you. The helper cannot truly understand how a problem feels to someone with a different social context and personality. With age and experience comes the temptation to believe we know how to help, but every client and situation presents unique dilemmas. When you don't know what to do next, simply tell the client, "At this point, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do next to be helpful." This empowers the client and acknowledges that you're working on their problem. Helping lies at the heart of all social life. By understanding its complexities and practicing humble inquiry, we can become more effective helpers and improve life for everyone around us.